Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin is in the studio today to answer your questions. If you have recently uncovered or recovered some hidden treasures and need some help figuring out what it is, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Antiques Today, Mark Lawson, your questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing antiques today with Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin. Mark is a past member of the American Society of Appraisers and has completed courses in the NYU Appraisal Studies Program in Period American Furniture at the Metropolitan Museum. He is also certified in diamond grading from the Gemological Institute of America, an RPI graduate with a degree in materials engineering. Mark travels throughout the region, meeting with clients, helping them settle estates and family treasures. If you have a question about your family treasures, maybe grandma's old Hummels, dust them off, take a look. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson, welcome back.
Hey, Ray. Great to be here.
How's the summer gone?
Oh, it's been exceptional. Had a nice vacation. Have been cataloging more exceptional collections.
Weren't you doing an enormous cataloging project the last time
we
you
did,
were on?
We did, yeah. And we had a big sale with it. That was the beginning of August. Very successful.
Good.
Yeah. And now
what was it you were cataloging? I forget.
Oh, it was a big Saratoga memorabilia collection.
Oh, that's right. So it went well.
Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Did you say before we just started just now that you're going to be blogging?
Well, what I thought it occurred to me because we often don't have quite enough time as maybe the callers would like or I would like to expand on a topic to talk about things. And also, we leave a lot of people hanging. I thought it would be nice to start a blog where I just put up like show notes, put up, you know, the resources that I referred to, say a little bit more about each of the things just to as a resource so people can get a little bit more information about the things that they're looking to find out about.
Well, feel free to put a link to the audio of this program, which will be up about 10 minutes after we're done.
So, awesome. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Mark Lawson is our guest. It's Antiques Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. And we start with Jim in Lanesboro. Jim, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have these two pictures from my parents' estate. They probably were bought in like 1950. They're not paintings, but it's like a young boy and a young girl, like in Italian, you know, dress, like from Naples or somewhere. And they're it's an oval 15 inches one way and 13 inches the other way.
Are they under glass?
No. They're in a frame. They're not under glass. And again, it's probably a 12-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl, like in matching Neapolitan costume.
Sure. Are the surface, if you lightly run your fingers over the surface of the picture, is it smooth or is there some roughness to it?
It's smooth.
Smooth. So
my father was a firefighter, so I can't imagine they would have spent a lot of money on it.
Sure. Well, those sorts of things, in Italy, tourists, and even back in the 19th century, there was a lot of art produced there, original works of art painting for sale to tourists or travelers coming through. So it's not unheard of that you might have something that was an original painting.
'Cause my father was in the war, and he went through Italy, you know, in the war, so he brought back some stuff from, you know, Italy.
Sure, sure.
But
They sound interesting. They could either be a painting or a print. If it's smooth, it could be a watercolor. You know, if you could send us some images at marklawsonantiques@gmail.com, I would be happy to take a closer look and try and tell you one way or the other for sure. Also,
You're been, yeah.
go ahead.
Sorry. No, I'm saying you've been awesome. Thanks a lot. But oh, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say the other thing with works of art that you're not sure if it's an original work or a print, modern prints that are done with a lithographic process after maybe, the 1920s or 30s, if you look at them under magnification, you'll see some pixelation, like when you look up close at looking close at a color TV screen. And that's a good way to tell whether something is a print or not. If you see the pixelation, it's definitely a print. If you don't see the pixelation, it still might be a print, but you've increased the probability that you're looking at an original work of art.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest today on Vox Pop. It's Antiques Today and Franklin in Corinth. Franklin.
Yes, good afternoon. Real quick, I inherited kind of like a notepaper, a little note to one of my ancestors from the writer Tennyson, T-E-N-N-Y-S-O-N. Wondering if it might have any value.
Yeah, certainly. He was a poet laureate, I believe, of England in the 19th century. I don't know if he lived into the 20th century, but very well known over there, famous poet. It's the kind of thing that is interesting and it's going to have a little bit of value, but not a great deal of value. With any kind of autographed material, if the content can make all the difference in the world, if it's him writing about how he was snubbed by Queen Victoria or, something interesting historically like that, it could have some much more value than just, a little note inscribed to a relative or somebody that was a fan of his. I quickly checked auction records. Little note by Tennyson original, typically at auction sell for anywhere from $150 to $250. So a little bit of value, but not a fortune.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very
Thanks
welcome.
A lot. Now, how would you authenticate something like that?
Good question. Well, one thing is once you get into to autographs in the 20th century, for instance, presidential autographs, many of the presidents, because of the volume of signatures they had to generate, used a device called an auto pen, which would actually sign their signature. So for that, you need an expert eye because you still have a pen moving over a piece of paper. And what you're looking for is closely under magnification, where you'll see where the lines cross. You can see the evidence of more ink being laid down and the pen or carving a path through the prior line. So that way you can tell if it's actually been written or it's as opposed to being a printed signature. If it's a printed signature, there won't be any indication that one line has crossed over the other, leaving extra ink.
Well, what I mean is Tennyson's been dead an awfully long time.
Sure.
Couldn't somebody with a fair amount of skills just sort of copy the...
They could, and there's some famous forgers that made a great in the 19th century and the 20th century that made were very successful doing exactly that. For me, when I'm talking to a person that brings something into me, I always get the history of it.
Right.
And you're making really it's a bit of educated guesswork, but still I ask about the history and I get a sense of whether it's plausible. So I know that it's at least possible.
But what if you're wrong? In other words, what if that last caller's parents had the story backwards or they were bamboozled in some way? You take it to auction. It sells. Is that on you?
It would be if I was being paid to do
authentication.
Official authentication or appraisal,
right.
Then it might be. But even if you send something off to PSA to get Mickey Mantle's autograph authenticated or something, there's pages of disclaimers. Mm-hmm. So it's arguable who's really responsible ultimately, unless you get into millions of dollars or something. It's tough. I ask questions, get an idea of the history. And if it seems on the level, then I know there's some good probability there. It doesn't eliminate the possibility that once upon a time somebody got snookered.
It would be an awful lot of work for a $150 scrap of paper.
This is true.
Our guest today is Mark Lawson. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have an antiques question, we'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is here. We talk antiques every so often on this program. And you have another big event coming up, yeah?
Yeah, we're doing an appraisal day at the Malta Community Center this Saturday. It's September 14th from 10 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
It's free if you want to just come and watch. People bring in things. I line them up at the front of the room, get up, talk a little bit about the antique business, and go down the table talking about each item, its history, how much it's worth. It's interesting.
When
people
is that?
Enjoy it. This Saturday, September 14th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Malta Community Center in Malta, New York.
Well, that sounds like fun. No. I guess I'll show up. I got to write
down. It'd be great to see you.
Got to write a little Tennyson thank you note, and I'll bring it up here.
Yeah.
See if I can get it by you. This email came in from Edward. I would love to hear anything you could tell me about a bottle I dug up yesterday. Dark brown glass, heavy bottom, is indented, looks handmade, turned, although there are mold seams on the rest of the bottle. So it's dark brown. The picture that you have printed there is black and white.
I'm looking right at it. So it looks like a 19th century blown in the mold wine bottle.
Ah.
Old, definitely an antique, relatively common sort of thing that at a bottle show you might see priced anywhere from $10 to $25.
Yeah.
Interesting, but not terribly valuable.
Okay. This email from Roxanne. I have an antique carry safe in the garage, which a family member purchased over 30 years ago. It's about 3 feet high, 2 feet wide, and deep on wheels. I have the combination, which works. Other than rust on the exterior, appears to be in pretty good shape. An online appraiser told me it's worth about $600 based on photos I sent him. Considering its weight, do you think this is something I'd be able to sell? If so, does that price sound right? I don't use it. Would love to get it out of the attached garage. And that's from Roxanne.
My experience in the antiques business has always been that value is inversely proportional to weight.
Interesting.
The more difficult it is to move something around, the tougher it is to sell and the less it sells for generally.
The right ballpark, though, for an old safe like that?
Maybe retail, if you really wanted one and you went to a retail safe store or something. In my experience, a safe like that, I'd be happy to get $50 or $100 for.
Okay.
You know, probably has close to $50 in scrap value, iron value. Sometimes the 19th century ones have beautiful stenciled decoration,
mm-hmm.
sometimes painting.
Yep.
You know, it'll have a nice gold lettering of the firm that it was for. I think those stand a chance of having a little bit more value, but generally they're almost impossible to sell. And in my experience doing estates, very often when somebody has a safe like that in the basement, they just leave it behind.
Okay, now back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Ellen in Pittsfield. Ellen.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a lamp that was my grandmother's, and at the bottom of it says Carlsbad, Austria. And the only thing I could find is it's somehow related to Czechoslovakia.
Sure. Well, that that area of the world generally called Bohemia, parts of it comprise Austria, part Germany, Czechoslovakia. Is it made out of porcelain?
It's made out of porcelain. I think it used to be an oil lamp.
Okay.
Because of the neck on it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like an open peony is what it looks like.
I beg your pardon, an open what?
A peony. Flower.
Oh, peony.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Zach,
gotcha.
The engineer, was ready to hit the dump button. No, we're all right there. We're all right.
Oh, that's interesting. That sounds nice. Like almost it suggests a lamp that might have a Art Nouveau kind of influence with a naturalistic forms from around the turn of the century. Although German porcelain at that time was very often covered with flowers, you know, done in like a millefiori, thousand flowers, or all sorts of different floral themes. It sounds very nice. Anytime you have an oil lamp that's been converted to electricity, that typically decreases its value. The collectors that pay the most for these pay a premium for oil lamps or kerosene lamps in their original state. And the kind of porcelain from Germany or Austria from that time period around the turn of the century was relatively mass produced for export to the United States for the decorative market. Just the Carlsbad, Austria, that's not going to be a particularly desirable maker. So it's not going to have significant value in that regard. But depending on what the design is, you know, it could be worth. How tall is it?
It's just about, I say, 14 inches.
Okay, so not a bad size. If it's in very nice condition and an unusual and attractive design, could be worth, you know, over $100. Mm. More likely, if it's just kind of a standard run-of-the-mill sort of thing in today's market, where things have generally, over the last 10 years, dropped in value 60 to 90%, it might be something that would sell at an estate sale for $25 to $50.
All right, Ellen, thanks for the call. Why have values dropped 50 to 90%?
Pure demographics. Young people don't collect things the way our generation and our parents and grandparents' generations did. The world's very different. You know, my kids, they'll furnish a new apartment at IKEA or Target. When they move, they'll give this stuff away or donate it, and the next place they land, they'll buy new stuff there. They travel light, and when you have the complete knowledge and content of the world at your fingertips,
yeah,
in these, you know, whether it's a smartphone or a laptop, That's a game changer. You know, you don't need to. People don't collect things.
Do you think they ever will again?
It's hard to say. You know, I tell people regularly my crystal ball's in the shop,
yeah,
for repairs.
Yeah.
But it's hard to. I never would have imagined things changing the way that they have. And I mean, the smartphone. And could you have imagined 20 years ago that some of the things that the state of the world and culture and stuff.
If I can remember 20 years ago, I'd let you know. Well, let's go back to the phones. Melanie and Latham. Melanie.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Melanie.
I've been collecting porcelain figurines for many, many years. And I've always enjoyed looking on the guides to be able to get an idea of how the prices are, you know, fluctuating.
Sure.
I also have been collecting Metzger Orloff, and I have had no luck in finding any sort of price guide or additional information aside from a little blurb in WikiLeaks.
What's Metzger Orloff?
Yes.
Sounds like a
Metzger
type.
Metzger and Orloff.
I think, weren't they a retailer rather than a manufacturer?
They have it's a marked, these are marked items. They are, I think, German or one of the countries back in their origin. Hungarian. Yeah.
I'm just the... I see the mark. This was a mark that for years I had the toughest time finding out anything about. And so I've had the same experience 15, 20 years ago that you're having today. The most I was ever able to discover that was that it was a small factory. They didn't so this was a manufacturer. It wasn't a retailer. A small factory. They did some very interesting designs, you know, Art Deco, you know, early 20th century designs from Germany. And I always thought they were really neat, but since I could never find out anything significant about the factory or the origin, I always assumed, I finally decided that it must have been a place that didn't make an awful lot, so there's not enough out there for there to have been any, you know, particular big collecting interest or research done on. So the although the designs were always very interesting and nice quality.
Quantity and a market for these items. They some of the earlier stuff are sort of clunky looking, but the later stuff has got a very fine, almost an Hungarian, Austrian type porcelain, which is very beautiful.
Sure, yeah, I agree.
And I've heard about the I'm not sure if the two guys were related, Metzger and Orloff, but I've heard Metzger by himself elsewhere.
Hmm.
But I keep looking around for something like a Pearson's Guide or something like that that gives you at least an idea of what was manufactured and what the price thing. I'll find something in Colville's once in a while, and it's loaded on eBay and Ruby Lane. But
what I would recommend is an unexpected place that I sometimes find good, interesting information is just on the eBay listings. Every so often, for whatever it is, every so often somebody that's an expert and really knowledgeable or came across some information that none of us would have been able to find will put, you know, something up for sale on eBay and include that information in the listing. So the only thing I could say would be to, you know, mine those listings that you're seeing, read through them, see if you can get any additional information or clues there.
Yeah, it's one of those areas, and who knows, maybe when I retire, I'll write a price guide.
All right, good.
Melanie, you're not a stock car driver by any chance, are you? Okay, I'm hearing high revolutions per minute there. Let's go to another phone call, Timothy and Byrne. Timothy, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the call. I have what is referred to as a Victorian trophy case. It's about 6 feet wide by 7 feet tall, and it contains probably 28 taxidermy birds and a dozen mammals, including minks and weasels and snipe and ducks and owls and that kind of thing. And I was wondering, who do I talk to or find out how to value this thing for insurance purposes?
Well, I think you want to be very careful. Traditionally, the difficulty with the types of taxidermy that you're describing is at least some significant portion of the birds that you have stuffed and on display are probably endangered species. So even though it's 100 or 150 years old, the material that you have will be covered under all laws related to the Endangered Species Act. So you have to be very careful. Many of those things will be highly illegal by law to sell. So just
but can he establish a value to insure it?
I'm not sure. It may be that some of them are even subject to confiscation.
Oh, for Pete's sake, they're 150 years old.
Hey, what can I tell you? I just know that historically, in the past, these have been some of the these are issues that have come up with specifically these types of collections.
So
you just have to be careful and make sure that you're complying with the law.
All right. Well, Timothy didn't give his last name, so he should be safe for now.
The Pember Museum up in Greenwich has a number of these.
Great.
Cases.
Yeah, the case, the ones that are the so the best thing to do would be to if somehow to sort out the I mean obviously a raccoon's not endangered, obviously a mink's not endangered, obviously a I don't know, birds are tough. Maybe a duck isn't endangered.
Well,
I don't know. Well, it's tricky because the laws are really strict and they enforce them. Enthusiasm.
Okay. Well,
is that an antique guy or is that a museum person or who do I speak to about
I would start doing your own research online and see what you find out. And as you find out information that informs your search, proceed as you think best. I don't know where there's a list of endangered animals, but it's a tricky area.
Even stuffed animals that are 150 years old, to be clear.
Even stuff, as far as I know, my understanding,
the Cohoes mastodon is endangered, and that's also, you couldn't sell that?
I'm pretty sure, well, the law is complicated and detailed and...
So much red tape. Timothy, good luck with that. Thanks for a very interesting call.
Yeah, sorry I didn't have better information for you, or more encouraging anyway.
That's a weird show. Let's go to Gail in Oneonta. Gail, you're on.
Hi, I have a picture, and I'll give you the information on it. It's called A Virginia Home in the Olden Time, published by Currier and Ives, 125 Nassau Street, New York, and entered according to Act of Congress in the year of 1872 by Currier and Ives in the office of the Librarian of Congress at Washington.
Okay, about what size is it?
Oh, didn't measure. There's a tape measure in that closet.
I mean, you could ballpark it, right?
Oh, ballpark it?
Yeah, ballpark it.
Foot and,
like 12 by 8, probably.
Yeah. 12 by 8. Okay, reasonably small. So Currier and Ives...
A little bit more than 12, but okay.
Okay, cool. Okay. Currier and Ives were printers in New York that were very, very popular in the 19th century and made, I think, published thousands of different subjects in many different sizes. They were extremely popular. The value today is going to depend on a couple of things. The more valuable ones are the larger ones with the more interesting and unusual views, maybe railroad going through the countryside, firemen fighting a fire, of three-masted schooner at full sail. You know, some of the large ones can still have some very good value. But they did mass produce these. So the smaller ones today, you know, one that's your size, say the size that you're describing, if it retains its original frame and glass and it's in relatively unstained condition, very often they get, you know, water damage and stuff, it's the sort of thing that might be worth between $25 and $50. But I'll warn you also that they were so popular, they were widely reproduced in the 20th century. So there are as many or more later reproduction ones as there are original. I guess probably as the price has dropped down into that level, the arguably, if you take into account framing, a modern reproduction in a nice frame wouldn't be worth much less than that. But for the type that you're describing in that size frame today, it's going to be, you know, in the $25 to $50 range on a good day.
The picture itself is 12 and a half by 8, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're beautiful. They're hand-colored. Very, very popular collectible in the early 20th century.
Okay.
Gail, thanks for the call. Now, I understand that the frame, the original frame, would make a difference, but why the original glass? What are the odds a 150-year-old piece will have the original glass?
Oh, they very often do. Now, the old glass is very often more durable than newer glass, and a lot of it did survive. And it, you know, it'll be ripply, it'll give kind of like a wavy reflection, and it kind of adds to the antique kind of experience. It's like the patina on an old piece of furniture or an old painting where you don't clean it and make it look brand new. You leave it kind of darkened and old-looking because it gives it that kind of persona.
Gotcha. Our guest today is Mark Lawson. We talk antiques today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Mark Lawson Day. We talk antiques on the program today. A few emails here, Mark, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one has pictures attached. It's from Dina in Pine Bush. Dina writes, "This dish, pictured, has raised gilded leaves and hand-painted flowers. I haven't seen anything similar anywhere. Have you?"
Yeah, it's very nice quality. Definitely 19th century. There's a little four-digit number painted under glaze near the bottom rim.
Mm-hmm.
It could be at this before 1891. Anything that showed up in the or after 1891, anything that was manufactured for sale in the United States and imported here had to have a country of origin.
Ah.
So prior to that, which is this dates at least to the probably 1880s,
right,
they wouldn't have to have a country of origin on it. It's beautiful quality. I can see from the pictures. There's some like English porcelain from that period at Worcester or Copeland or Minton's.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my first guess. But they also made nice porcelain like this in and around Paris. You know, a good Paris, fine quality of Paris porcelain was like this. But there was also German stuff that approached this quality. So I would definitely say continental Europe is easy to say. Beyond that, the only thing I could say was 20 years ago, this would probably be at least a $100 to $150 plate. Today, even though it's of exquisite quality, it's probably closer to a $20 or $30
plate. All right, so you could put your ham and cheese sandwich on it if you really wanted to.
You could, and eat in style.
Oh, very nice. This email came in from Matthew in Great Barrington. Matthew writes, "I've recently inherited some silver plate items that I understand have little value, several heavy, large trays, cups, bowls, etc. First, is that correct regarding the value? And also, is there any way to sell these items as they're not important to me?"
I missed the part about the value.
He understands they have very little value.
Yes. Okay. So silver-plated items are items that look like silver, tarnished like silver, but it's just a thin coat of electroplated silver, usually over brass, which is mostly copper.
Right.
So I see lots of this material also. It's was the go-to gift in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s for anniversaries, weddings,
sure,
you know, for serving pieces. And back prior to that, in the 19th century, if you wanted to, if you had, what can I say? If you had, if you aspired to the higher levels of society and you couldn't quite afford a silver service that weighed 40 pounds made out of solid silver,
right,
you might get a beautiful looking one that looked like one made out of 40 pounds of solid silver, but that wasn't.
Okay.
So all that being, that's a lot. But and additionally, this material was mass produced and nobody uses it today. They don't have formal dining rooms anymore. There are no sideboards to put your silver service on. The most of this material, unless it's of exceptional quality or form by some special maker or with historical significance, it really has a value that only reflects its scrap metal value, which with the copper in it is going to be in the, you know, $1 to $2 per pound.
This one is from Tom, and then we'll jump back to the phones. Tom writes, "My wife inherited civilian war medals and accompanying documents that were given to her great aunts that worked directly for Winston Churchill in World War II. Is this something that we should take better care of than storing them in a drawer? I'm not where I have access at this time."
Okay, so these, at the very least, what you should do is sit down with anybody that's alive that has any recollection of this and put together a written narrative of who owned these, where they came from, how it was connected to Churchill, all of those things to give as good a picture of their history. If you have any kind of documentation, you know, if you also have a picture of that relative with Winston Churchill, that would help, or a letter from Winston Churchill would be great, saying, here's, you know, the thank you, whatever. Right. Any kind of written documentation helps. But very often, families don't have that. They just have the story. But the story is what makes it valuable. So document the story so that it's preserved and there, and the details aren't lost. Anytime I am selling something, if I have some history to it, you know, a story, a narrative always adds to the value, adds to the interest. So just make sure you record those things.
All right. Now back to the phones. Judith in Averill Park. Judith, you're on.
Well, hi.
Hi.
I have a question. So how are you? So, Mr. Lawson, I have quite a collection of 17th and 18th century, mostly botanical prints.
Nice.
The 19th century prints that I have are Audubon quadrupeds. I have, you know, Wilson birds. I have Besslers. I have Catesbys. I have, you know, you name it. I have quite several thousand, actually.
Wonderful.
And this is a lifelong collection. But as you mentioned before, the children aren't necessarily interested in it.
Yes.
And it's time for me to... I have to do a little more curation. I have to curate the collection a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But what would be your suggestion on next steps for this? I want to take care of it before, you know, my children have to deal with it when I kick the bucket.
Well, I certainly don't hope for any kicking of buckets anytime soon. I think the first step is to separate the... You're going to have a couple of different tiers of value, which will dictate sales channels or methods of disposing to your best advantage. The highest quality things should almost certainly be, you know, the material that's high value and desirable should probably be sold at auction. The mid-level to lower-level things, and again, you have a couple of different tiers of auctions. So, you know, the things that might be worth today more than $1,000 might go to one higher end auction. The things that might have a value in the $200 to $300 to $1,000 range might go into a next lower level auction that, you know, might be specialized in that kind of material. And then you'll be left with some things that may have had better value when you purchase them, but because of the changes in the marketplace today, they're not worth an awful lot. In that case, if you're looking down the road and planning about, you know, sometime downsizing and selling the contents of your house, it's the kind of material that typically in the current marketplace does best selling in an estate sale venue.
Okay.
If you send the stuff out to auction at that level, it might sell for astonishingly little and heartbreakingly little for you. So at least in an estate sale, it's a controlled sale. So you start at a reasonable level and, you know, you get some retail buyers coming through. My experience currently, for the things in the lower price levels, that's the best way to get the best returns.
Judith, thanks for the call. And now over to Kathleen in the Berkshires. Kathleen.
Yes. I have a autograph of Ronald Reagan when he appeared at the, when he was still a spokesman for GE, he stayed at a local hotel, so it's on the hotel stationery, and it says, "Best wishes, Ronald Reagan."
Great.
Any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, sure. So with people who were presidents, their autographs have the most value when it's an autograph that was created when they were actually president. After they were president and before, they're worth less. In this case, with Ronald Reagan, he was also a famous Hollywood personality, so he signed his autograph an awful lot before he was president.
Right.
As I said before, with autographs, any kind of content would be interesting. What does it say?
Best wishes, Kathleen.
Okay.
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, so he's a relatively collectible presidential autograph. You know, even though it's just that, I think today people, he has a little bit of an iconic stature.
Exactly.
With, you know, the way that he, you know, the great communicator that he's known as mm-hmm. being. And I think even...
Sounds like a saint today.
Well, the some people say that, yes. The...
comparison.
Yeah. But the... I think it's going to be worth at least in the $150 to $200 range, maybe even a little bit more. He beats Tennyson.
Right.
Which is... Which is interesting. It's just the marketplace has mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, what movies was Tennyson in, right? Was he in Death Valley days?
Tennyson.
I mean, come on. Let's... All right, Kathleen, thanks a lot. Congratulations on that one. Bob in Conesville. Bob, you're on.
Yes, hi, Ray and Mark. We have some Edison musical cylinders, which are 1920s music. We probably have over 100 of them, and they seem to be in excellent shape. And we also have an Edison cylinder player, which works, but it needs a crank handle made for it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering, is are they worth anything? And if they are, where can we list them or what?
Sure. There's a so the Edison players. They were one of the first music players. They were a cylinder of some sort of a celluloid material that had grooves cut into it like a record.
Right.
They'd mount in this player and rotate and play music. Had a big horn coming off of them. Very interesting, fun things, and invented by Edison. They're worth much less today than they used to be. The players, you know, if it's in missing the, if it had the crank, it might bring on a good night at auction $150 to $200, or sell on eBay for something like that. Without the crank, you could probably get close to that if you could find a replacement crank, even a reproduction one online somewhere. The cylinders are very common. Might be worth, you know, might sell on eBay for $1 to $5 a piece, depending on the rarity and desirability of the song. But it's one of those things that, you know, as time goes by and fewer people have any kind of awareness of them as being something special, the interest passes and the value drops. So, but they're interesting. They're very neat devices and a remarkable invention by, you know, there's an American icon, you know, Thomas Edison.
Right.
Any place we can donate.
Okay. What about donating them?
You can donate them. Most, for something like this, most institutions, unless they specifically need it for some display, they might just turn around and, you know, sell it for operating expenses. So, and that's fine if the you want to support an institution with a donation of whatever kind. You also can investigate local, you know, auctions where you can sell something like that. There's a good auction up in Ballston Spa, Talk of the Town Auctions, that might sell something like this for you. There's, you know, mm-hmm. smaller local auctions that you could go to.
I mean, are there specific Edison cylinders that are very rare? I mean, should he check and see what is on these cylinders?
The only thing I would say is what's the horn like on it?
No, he's gone.
Oh, okay. So the thing that, yes, but I don't think today it makes that much of a difference anymore. What does make a difference is if it has a large, ornate, beautifully decorated horn.
Okay.
That's so that it makes a nicer decorative object.
Let's go to Kathleen in Worthington. Kathleen.
Hi. I have an item which on the back is stamped weatherboard, patented June 21st, 1884. I've been always interested in art. I've never seen anything like this before or heard of anything being painted on weatherboard. What is weatherboard?
leatherboard. It sounds like some sort of composition material made to look like leather, or conversely, it could be a board that was made at some point out of scraps or pieces of leather. Hard to say one way or the other. And it has a painting on it?
Yes. What was, probably in its earlier days, a lovely floral painting. Mm-hmm. However, what it looks like to me is that this was on a different sheet. You cannot feel paint, you know, when you run your fingers across it. It looks to me like that may have been painted on a circular whatever and glued to this leather board.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I finally thought I would ask somebody about it because nobody else seems to know anything
about
it.
So it could even be a 20th century piece of board that somebody glued a 19th century painting on paper to. And there was I think that makes more sense because I think that let's see, I'm looking right here. I took a quick look. There is a material called leatherboard that, it looks like it's like a particle board, but it's either. Uh-huh. Made out of, interesting. It's a synthetic material made for making shoe soles out of.
Ah, okay.
So maybe,
I beg your pardon?
Said it's a board for making what out of?
They cut soles for shoes out of it. At least one leather board that I just found. Ah. And maybe somebody just had a piece of that and they used it to mount a picture on.
Well, I'll be darned. Well, Kathleen, good luck with that. Thank you very much. All right, Mark Lawson, how do people find you on the old internet?
Our website, marklawson.com, has a lot of information about who we are and what we do and lots of resources on it. And we're on Facebook. I think we're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. But most of the activity is on Facebook or our website.
Well, sir, good luck and good having you here.
Great to be here again.
The lines were loaded. We'll have to do this again very soon.
And people can go to the blog. We'll post try and have it up by tomorrow. Show notes, information, the information that I gave out today, and I'll try and give some more information that I wasn't able to give on the radio today.
Terrific. Support comes from Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, featuring individual attention in a private environment with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette using Naturalique organic products, StudioKTM.com. Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley in western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more, BergeronElectric.net. Agricultural Stewardship Association, presenting Landscapes for Land's Sake, art exhibit October 12th through 14th in Washington County. Opening reception October 12th, noon to 5 p.m. to benefit farmland protection, agstewardship.org. And Lakeview Orchard, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Apples, peaches, pumpkins, winter squash, apple cider, cider donuts, kapusta, galumpki, pierogi, and kielbasa, lakevieworchard.com. Thanks again to Mark Lawson for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Kayleen White answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Rich Guthrie and Catherine Schneider join us to talk birds. Stand by now for the book show.